So I'm going to speak, as Alice said, about discrete logarithm in all finite fields. I think one finite will be enough, but I didn't see it before. So. Too bad, it will be on all the slides. So what I'm going to present now is joint work with Renal Mercier on Nigel Smart and Frederick Vercotran. And in fact, I'm going to step and come back. There is one slide missing. What happened? Oh, one of my slides disappeared. Okay, so I remember what was on it, but it's not there anymore. So it's probably a problem going from Linux to Windows. I don't know what happened. So in the slide, I simply said that that what I'm going to present is the result of two papers. One which was presented at Eurocrypt this year, and the other which was presented at Crypto this year. And the first paper was with Renald, and the second paper with all my co-authors. So just to state this. So to compute discrete log in finite field, what we usually do is use what are called index calculus algorithms. So it's a very general algorithmic approach that is used for discrete logarithm, of course, but also for factoring numbers. And there are roughly two main subcases. The first subcase is what is called the number field sieve, and it's used for factoring and for discrete log in large characteristic for the moment. And the second subcase is function field sieve, which is usually used for discrete log in small characteristic. So, what was known about these algorithms before this talk? Well, the previous complexity results are on this slide. So I just need to introduce this notation. It's quite classical to many of you, but I want to recall it. So complexity in index calculus algorithm is usually expressed as what is called L of, well, Q is the size of the field, so it's not a problem, L of alpha on a second constant C. And it's exponential of c plus a little something times log q to the power alpha times log q to the power 1 minus alpha. So in some sense, let's take the two extreme possible value of alpha. If you take alpha equals 0, the log q contribution disappear and you only have log q. So taking exponential of log q gives you a polynomial time algorithm. If you take alpha equal 1, the log q disappear, you are just back with q to the power something, so it's an exponential time algorithm. For the index calculus, what happens? Well, we have two extreme cases which are well known, which are what happens when you look at discrete logs in FP, where P is a large prime, and what happens when you look at discrete log in fp to the n, where p is a small fixed prime and n is growing. In that case, the number field sieve gives you a complexity which is expressed as l of 1 third on some crazy constant, and the function field sieve, small characteristic, gives you something which is l of 1 third also, but with another smaller constant. What it means is that computing discrete log in finite field is slightly easier on small characteristics than in large. And now the question we are going to address is, what happens in the middle? We know what happens when we are looking at a prime field. We know what happens when we are in small characteristic, but in the middle, what's going on? Well, in between, previously the best known result was L of 1 half. And it's a big difference because, remember, alpha equals 0 is polynomial time, alpha equal 1 is exponential. Alpha equal 1 half is somewhere in the middle, and 1 third is more polynomial than 1 half, so it's really better. And so it's in these fields, up to now, computing discrete log was much easier than in field of the form p to the n, where both p and n are growing. So, oh, I found my slide again. So, what I'm going to do now is assume that Q is the size of the finite field, so Q is P to the n, where P is the Q characteristic, and n is the degree of the extension. So what we did at Eurocrypt with Renal was look again at the function field theory and show that when p is not too large, you get something very efficient. You get L of 1/3 with the function field theory. And what is even nicer is that it works without function fields. So it's still the function field theory by name, but the function field fields are no longer here. It's much easier. We just have polynomials, and it's much simpler. And at Crypto, we look at the other side. So we looked at the number field sieve algorithm, and what happened is kind of a miracle, because it where the function field sieve stops working, well, the number field sieve just come in, and everything is nice. And the, when we put this together, what we are going to find is that in all finite fields, you can compute discrete log in complexity L of 1/3. It's not the same constant everywhere, but it's L of 1/3 everywhere. So in order to look at this, we are going to start with a function field sieve for two reasons. Historical reason was first, and for ease of exposition, because the function field sieve is much easier to describe as a number field sieve. So first, there is an overall strategy in all index calculus algorithm, which is, well, you do some setup, you choose a lot of things, and then you have a seeding phase where you collect a lot of equations. Then these equations can be transformed into linear equations. And after this, you go to a linear algebra phase where you use structured Gaussian elimination on some iterative algorithm, the one you want, either long source or Wiedemann algorithm, or when you add small characteristic, block long source or block Wiedemann variation. But you do linear algebra anyway. And finally, there is one additional stage, which do not exist for factoring, which is the computation of individual logarithms. After this, you have some logarithms, but maybe not of the number you wanted. So now you need something else to compute the exact the logarithm of the exact number you wanted to have. Okay, so now let's start with the simplest case of the function field sieve algorithm. In this simple basic case, what we assume is that P is itself LQ of 1/3 on the constant C. Okay, so P is somewhere in the middle and the exponent is doing the rest. So the exponent is necessarily 1 over c times log q over log q to the power 2/3, because you want p to the n to be q, so it's clear. And what we do now is we choose two polynomials, f1 and f2, of degree d1 and d2, such that d1 times d2 is bigger than n. Okay, so far so good. And then we look at the resultant of this, at the resultant of y minus f1 of x on x minus f2 of y. So what we do, in fact, is we assert that y should be equal to f1 of x, and x should be equal to f2 of y, and we look now what's going on. And well, if this resultant is has an irreducible factor of degree n, then we can satisfy these two equations in a finite field of size p to the n. And that's what we are going to do. So you look at the irreducible factor of degree n, and well, you can look at it in two ways. You can either look at it as a, you can either take the resultant and eliminate y, and then you get an irreducible factor which is a polynomial in x, or you can eliminate x and get something which is an irreducible factor of the same degree in variable y. And it gives you two definitions of the same finite field, f of p to the n. And clearly, by our definition, the variable x and y both have well-defined images, which I will call alpha and beta, in the finite field f of p to the n. And now what we do is we simply look at elements in the finite field of this form. Well, there are two possibilities. When we do asymptotic analysis, this one is almost enough, but in practice it's also useful to use this, so I will just show you both. So we take element of the form alpha times beta plus A alpha plus B beta plus C, or A time alpha plus beta plus B. Okay, that's it. And now, in this expression, we can do two things. We can either replace beta by F1 of alpha, because we know these two numbers are equal, or we can replace alpha by F2 of beta, because these two elements are equal. Okay, and we get two different expressions of the same element in the final integral. So it's an equation, H1 of alpha, some expression in alpha, equal to another expression in beta. And when you look at the degree, depending on what form you chose, the degrees are either d1 plus 1 and d2 plus 1, or d1 and d2. It's not very important. They are relatively small degree. And then you say that this is a good equation when both h1 and h2 split into linear factors. And if this happens, what you have is up to a constant in Fp, you have a multiplicative equality between terms of the form alpha plus something. So you have a product of alpha plus something equal another product of beta plus other constants. So to make this clearer, let's take an example. So let's start by choosing F1 and F2 this way in the in over a finite field Fp, where p equal 2 to the 16 plus 1. So what happens if you take a resultant here? You find that x is a solution of this degree 25 polynomial, which is irreducible, and y is a root of this degree 25 polynomial, which is also irreducible, of course. Okay. And now let's take this element, beta plus 2 alpha minus this constant. And you can see that it can be written either as this polynomial in alpha, which is equal to this, or as this polynomial in beta, which is equal to, well, there is a constant here, and the product of beta plus something. And now, so this is a real equality. So now you take the logarithm of this, you look at the logarithm modulo p to the n minus 1 divided by p minus 1. I divide by p minus 1 to remove the constant of the finite field. So the two disappear, and we have a linear equation between this logarithm here and this one. So what we do now is we collect many and many and many equations, and we need to do linear algebra to find the solution of this system. So first, to do the linear algebra, we need to do it modulo p to the n minus 1. But well, for many reasons, what we do first is we factor the cardinality of the field. So we factor p to the n minus 1. We find this. So this is p minus 1. This is a small factor. All these are rather large. And what happens when you do iterative linear algebra algorithm, you should never use, well, usually people do it modulo prime. But you can do it modulo a composite number as long as it has no small factor. Because if there are small factors, you might encounter problems, because you might want to invert numbers which are not invertible, and it's a problem. So what we do, we just take the cardinality, remove the small factors, and then, okay, we can launch the linear algebra. And after this, we find that this two-line number, it's the same number, but the line was too short, is the logarithm of alpha plus 1 in base alpha. And this two-line number is the logarithm of beta in base alpha. Okay, so we already have logarithms of small elements, of elements which are either linear polynomial in alpha or linear polynomial in beta.
How long did this take, this particular computation?
I have the data at the end, but it's really short. It's a few hours on my previous laptop. Doing the saving. The linear algebra was a long phase. It took about a week or something. The linear algebra was long, but sieving was really, really easy. So now let's go a little more theoretical and look at the complexity analysis of this algorithm in the setup I have described. So clearly, we have a linear system in roughly 2p unknowns. It's slightly less because, no, it's exactly 2p unknowns, sorry. It's exactly 2p unknowns. And for each candidate, for each equation, the probability of success, heuristic, because we assume independence of, we assume that polynomial on both sides factor into linear term with probability which are the same as if the polynomial were independent, which is not true. But, well, this heuristic is everywhere in index calculus algorithm, so why not make it here also? And the probability of success is simply 1 over factorial of d1 plus 1 times 1 over factorial of d2 plus 1. Because when you have a polynomial of degree something, the probability that it splits into linear term is 1 over factorial of the degree. So it's just a basic result. The expected number of candidates we have after sieving, so we need to have enough equation, we need to sieve over 2p times the product of the two factorial elements to get enough. Okay? And so that's the time for sieving. And to solve the linear system, we know that it will cost big O of d1 plus d2 times p squared. Because when you do iterative linear algebra, the cost is the square of the dimension times the weight of lines. And EV lines here have weight d1 plus d2 plus 2. So now we need to choose d1 and d2 with product larger than n. Well, we just balance them and choose d1 roughly equal d2 equal square root of n. If we look at the complexity of the previous page and express them as L of 1 third, we find that the linear algebra cost is L of 1 third times 2c, where c, remember, c was the size of p. So since we have p squared, we need 2c. On the sieving cost, so you need to express factorial of square root of n, and you find the p here gives a c, and these two factorial of square root of n gives this 2/3 over square root of c. And there is something important. When sieving, it's not possible to sieve over more than p cube elements. Because if you look at the definition of what we are sieving over, we have only 3 degrees of freedom, no more. So we can't sieve over more than p to the 3. And it's not p to the 4, because if you add a constant here, since we are looking at stuff modulo constant, we will be looking several times at the same equation. So it's not good. It's not p4, it's p3. Okay, so the algorithm will work when the sieving space is large enough. So when 3 times c is bigger than this, which means that c should be larger than 1/3 to the power 2/3. And with this value, 1/3 to the power 2/3, the complexity you find is LQ of 1/3 with a constant cube root of 3. Which is smaller than constant for function field sieving in other cases. Okay? And in general, the complexity is expressed that way. It's c plus max of c on 2 over 3 square root of c. Okay. And now we need to do the individual logarithm, but it's quite easy. So we just set up for ourselves a challenge, which was lambda, which is a kind of expansion of pi in the finite field. So we have it there, and we want to compute the discrete logarithm of this. So what we do first is we write this value as some constant time numerator of the over denominator, where the numerator is a polynomial which factor is things of low degree, and d, the denominator also factor in low degree. So this is quite easy to do. And once you have this, what you need to do, well, you know the log of these ones, you know the log of these ones, but for all those, the logs are missing. So you need to do something to find the logarithms. So what we do is something which is very classical. We are going to do a descent procedure. For example, I am going to show how to compute this logarithm. So what we do to complete the logarithm is simply we take a new element here, and we find that the element can be expressed as either this or that, and factoring, you find here the element whose log we are searching, and everything is of lower degree. So it's good, because now we just need to compute the log of the low degree stuff. So we do it again. So let's take one of these elements, this one, okay, on the beta side. If you factor this, the two expressions of this element, you find something which is only linear in alpha, and almost everything is linear in beta except the factor we are looking for. So we have the logarithm of this, and backtracking, we compute everything, including the logarithm of lambda. And finally, we conclude that this two-line number is the logarithm of lambda in basis 3 alpha. Why is it 3 alpha and not alpha? Because alpha by itself does not generate the full finite field. It misses some constant. So we need to add a 3 in front of it to be sure that it generates everything. Okay, then we have the logarithm.
Okay.
So, but that only works when p is exactly of the right size. So what happens when p is smaller than that? So what we propose is to use a family of algorithm parameterized by some parameter big D, and to sieve, and now we sieve over elements of the form f of alpha times beta plus g of alpha, where f and g are polynomial of degree d in alpha. Okay, and then you do a similar analysis. You find that now the good way to work is to not to balance d1 on d2, but to balance d1 on big D times d2. Okay, let's summarize what happened. The first algorithm I showed you is d equal 1. Okay? On d equal 1, depending on what is the value of, so p is, as I said before, p is L of 1 third on some constant. Depending on the value of the constant in this range, the complexity increases. Okay? So it decreases down to the minimum cube root of. And now, here you can no longer apply the algorithm because you are stuck. The saving space is too small. So you need to go to the other one with d equal 2. But there is a jump in the complexity. And now it costs much more. It goes up to cube root of 64 over 9. And then it goes down again. And you have d equal 3, down again. And everything goes nicely to this limit point, which is the complexity of the function field sieve in the small prime case. And there is another boundary here. From this point on, you should be using the number of field sieve, which I'm going to present now. Okay, and that's it for the function field sieve. So, okay, so it's quite easy. We have just polynomial to look at and factor on, and everything is going well. So I need to mention something more about this complexity. This is exactly what happens when you do asymptotic analysis. But in practice, when you go there, in fact, you see that you don't have a jump. In practice, when you look at concrete size of finite field, what happens is that it goes steeply from there to there, but it's not a jump. It still continues. You can still do stuff and get something which is continuous, not a big jump that way. Okay. So the complexity in the general case, what happens is if p is no longer lq of 1 third on some constant, as in my previous slide, but something which is strictly smaller than lq of 1 third, then you can no longer say that d should be a constant. Instead, you should take d to be the nearest integer to this. And with this choice of d, there is a kind of a miracle which happens. The sieving space is p to the power 2d, okay, it's this. The smoothness, the size of the smoothness base is this. The smoothness probability is this, okay. And when you put everything together, everything lines up correctly on the complexity lq of 1 third on cube root of 32 nits. So in fact, when you are using the function field sieve, either in small characteristic or in any characteristic which is strictly smaller than fq of 1 third of your field size, you have the same complexity. Okay. The only case where we have this, the only case where you have all these crazy curves is when p is exactly a q of 1/3 of something.
Okay.
And well, there are some possible extension of the function field sieve to speed up the computation. So you can use some, you can exploit the Galois group to speed up the computation. And this is especially useful if you want to compute in f2 to the power n times m, where n and m are balanced in the right way. So when m is equal to the square of n, and then you can do something which is very nice. And it's also practical to use the Galois group in other cases, such as this one. In this finite field, we computed discrete logarithm by, and we gained a lot from the fact that 30 also, well, that 6 also divide, that's, sorry, 5 also divide p minus 1. Then you can put a nice Galois structure and do a lot of stuff. But when you do this, you need to use function fields again. You can't only work with polynomial. So it's, we lose a little. Okay, so that's it for the function field sieve. And now what we can do is, of course, look at the other side and look at the number fields. And once again, I am going to focus on the basic case of the algorithm to see what happens and explain how you can extend it to the other value. So with the number field sieve, the basic variation where everything is simple is when p is l of 2/3 of p to the n. Okay. And more precisely, when p is L of 2/3 and some constant, where the constant is near 2 cube root of 1/3. So what happened in that case? What you first do is you choose any polynomial of degree n, which is irreducible and has very small coefficient. So it's easy to find one. And then you say, okay, now I will build a second polynomial, f2 equal f1 plus p. So clearly, these two polynomials are equal mod p, by definition. And now I'm going to look at the two number fields, k1, which is obtained by taking q of x divided by f1 of x, and q2 by using f2 of x. And clearly, since f1 and f2 are equal mod p, we have a commutative diagram here. So if you take anything in the ring of integer of so in z of x, in the ring of integer of q of x, you can send it to the rings of integers in the two number fields. Sorry, and again you can take this and replace theta 1 by its image in the finite field. On the other side, you can replace theta 2 by its image in the finite field. Both have the same image, of course, the common root, which is any root of f1, and the diagram commutes. Okay. So what we do now is we say, okay, we are going to sieve again and try to factor stuff again, and we are going to factor stuff into factor bases which are ideal of degree 1 in both ring of integers. In both number fields. So first we need to choose a smoothness bound, a maximum norm of the ideals, on some sieve limit. So and what we are going to do is we are going to look at the pair of coprime integer a and b, such that the norm of a minus b theta 1 and the norm of a minus b theta 2 are both smooth in the two number fields. Okay, then there are some technical stuff I won't go into, but which is very important, which is exactly the same as in the usual number fields, is that you need to add technical information to take care of the class number and the unit groups of the two number fields. So this is usually done by adding what are called the logarithmic maps of Shirokawa, and it's a well-known tool which works well, so I'm not going to describe it more. And once you have done this, and you take logarithm, what you find is a kind of linear equation between something which I put into quotes because this way it's not properly defined, but between logarithms of ideal in the of the ideals which are in the smoothness basis. And once you have this equation, you just need to solve the linear system again, and you are done. Okay? So you this can be defined exactly by rising all the equation to the class numbers, and then it becomes well defined, but I won't be doing it. Okay? And in practice, what is extremely useful is to use for F1 a Galois extension. Because if you do this, since P is inert in the first number field, you need to have an isomorphism between the Galois group of the first number field and the Galois group of F of BQ, well, divided by FP. So, and this is very simple because it's cyclic, it's generated by the Frobenius. And so you know that this number field K1 will be a cyclic number field of degree A. And what is very nice with this is that it will partition the factor base F1 into n parts. Okay? On each, the ideals in all parts will be related to each other using the generator of the Galois group. If you choose well for your Galois group generator, what will happen is that the logarithms of related ideals will be obtained simply by multiplying by powers of p. So in practice, what happens is doing this, you are effectively reducing the size of the factor base on the side number one by a factor n. And this doesn't help asymptotically, but in practice, it's a big, it's a huge help. So it's very, very useful to use Galois extensions. Just one thing, what I said about, what I said there is much, much easier to put together when n is a prime degree, when the extension degree is also prime. Okay, so once again, I need to compute individual logarithms. So, and once again, I'm going to use a special q-descent procedure. So here it's slightly more complicated because we are using number of fields. So what you do is, okay, first you say that f of p to the n can be represented that way by fp of t divided by f. And we assume that we want to compute the logarithm of some element y in basis t, where t is the generator. So what we do? First, we look for many elements, z of the form y to the power something times t to the power something. So what I claim is that if you know how to compute the logarithm of z, you clearly can recover the logarithm of y. Just say you have a linear equation. The logarithm of z is I times the logarithm of y plus j times the logarithm of t in basis t, so plus j times 1. So it's just simple linear algebra, very simple, to recover the logarithm of y. Okay, so you look at many elements of the z, and what you want to find is you want to ensure that z will have a norm in the first number field, which will factor into prime, which will be small, but not as small as our previous smoothness limit. It will be smooth with quite a large bound B of the form L of the power, L of 2/3 on some constant. So it's much larger than the factor base we had initially. We also want to ensure that we only have ideals of degree 1 in this factorization. Okay. So one way to do this is to ensure that the norm of z in K1 is square free. Okay. But what happens is that the probability for a number to be both smooth and square free is roughly 6 over pi square times the probability of smoothness alone. So it's just an offset by a constant. So it doesn't matter. This condition doesn't matter a lot. So this one doesn't matter a lot either. It's easy to have in practice. Okay. And once we have this z, which factor into ideals of norm which are small enough, you can look at this. And what you need to do to compute the log of z, you know this part of the logarithm. So what you need to do is to compute the log of all these ideals which are not in the initial factor base. Okay. For each of them, we are going to do a special cube descent, which means that we are going to sieve again over pairs of integer ab such that qj divide a minus b theta 1. If you do this, then you need to look at these two norms and hope that they are smooth enough. So this time smooth enough means that it's B2 smooth with some limit B2 which is strictly smaller than B1. In fact, what we do for the smoothness limit is we need to use a geometric second. You need to reduce the smoothness bound by some constant at every step until you get under the initial limit. So you find a new equation with new special Qs, and you do it again and again and again and again. And once everything is below the limit, you know the logarithm, you backtrack, and find the logarithm of z. And that's it. Okay. You need to note that when you do this procedure, you will have large ideals on both sides. So we will use the special Q descent both in both number fields. One, we will do it one time on one number field and the other time in the next one. And go again and again until everything is down to earth and we can compute the logarithms. Okay, in practice, we can do something slightly better. Once again, it's an improvement that does not change the asymptotic complexity, but which is very useful in practice. So it's instead of factoring z itself, what we are going to do is write z as the quotient of two polynomials of smaller degree than z itself. So this is not p, this should be n, because p is the large prime, so if the degree are... the coefficient here are going to be small. So it's not the degree, the coefficient here which are going to be small of the order of square root of p. So instead of having something which is large and then you pray for it to factor, you do two things which are slightly smaller and you get a slightly better probability. And to find this representation, there is a very classical trick which is to use lattice reduction and to reduce this lattice. So here I am using the French convention, so the lattice generator are in column, not in line, and the boldface stuff here are vectors. So z here is the coefficient of z in basis t, 1 t, t square, tz is the coefficient of tz, etc. And you expect that LLL will find a short vector with the right norm, so the coefficient will be of the right size, and everything will be okay. Okay. So now let's take an example. So we did an example on a total of 120 digits, which was a 40 digit number raised to the power 3. And to do this, we had nothing to program. We just reuse the code Reynald and I have developed for years to do computation in FP. We didn't change a single line of code. We just used it with sec configuration files, and it worked. The prime p is here, and the group order p to the cube minus 1 has quite a large factor, which is a 110-bit factor, and we chose these two number fields. OK? Okay, this one is a cyclic Galois group, so it's nice. And well, this one is whatever it is. Okay, so you have the automorphism of Q to alpha 1 here. K1 also has class number 1, so it's very simple. And we know a system of fundamental units here. So for the first number field, we are not going to use any of Shirokawa maps. You can do everything by hand, by computing with numbers and not ideals. So it's very nice side. The second field is more complicated, but since the signature is 1-1, you only need a single logarithmic map, so it's not very costly to you to do this. So the smoothness basis we used had a total of 1 million prime ideals. So on the first side we had roughly 900,000, but since we had the Galois action, we gained the factor of 3. Only 300,000, and on the second side we had 700,000. Okay, so we did we used lattice sieving to find everything, and what happened was on the K2 side we had to smooth number of 150 bits, and on the K1 side on number of 110 bits. So it took 12 days to sieve on 16 processors. So it was not a small computation, but as discrete log computation goes, very reasonable. Okay. So the linear algebra, we started with a matrix of this size, where coefficients were mostly plus minus 1, plus minus p, and plus minus p squared. So this is not very usual. Usually you have only small values. But here, due to the Galois action, we had this multiple of p. But it's a special case which is very easy to deal with. So you can write the overall matrix as a sum of three matrix with small coefficient. And you can say the overall matrix is the first matrix plus p times the second one plus p squared times the third one. So we only have small numbers everywhere. And using structure Gaussian elimination, we went down to a much smaller matrix with this side. And then we could do the Lanczos algorithm in 1 week. Since the class number of K1 is 1, you can check the discrete logarithm of the generator of ideals. Okay, you can check all this, and everything works. I won't ask for you to check now. Ooh. What's happening? To move anymore. So, once again, we set up a challenge for individual discrete logarithm. Once again, we started from pi and used a very similar formula. We generate almost everything when we do a discrete logarithm starting from pi, just a kind of a tradition. So using polar rule, we computed the discrete logarithm everywhere except on the large prime. To get a complete result, we wrote the number as this fraction, where all these coefficients are of the size square root of p. Numerator and denominator are both smooth in K1. And we had to do a special Q descent with a tree of three level of descent. After that, we could recover the discrete logarithm modulo L. This is the missing part. Each special Q sieving took about 10 minutes. So the total to compute one discrete logarithm was 14 hours on a single computer. I turn to the complexity analysis of this algorithm. Once again, you write p as l of 2/3 and some constant c, and this gives n equals this. So it's almost the same formula as before, except that you have 1/3 instead of 2/3 here, and that the 1/3 and 2/3 are reversed in the p expression. So the parameters of the algorithm, the good parameters, are to take the same sieve limit and smoothness limit. It will be L C prime of 1/3 for some constant C prime, which will be this value. Okay, why is it this value? Because you look at the size of the number that you need to smooth. So this is the size. So you look at the probability of smoothness. And now what you need to do is to minimize this on its minimum when you have this equality, which yield this value of C. Okay? And the heuristic complexity it's still heuristic because we are still doing the same assumption of independence of the factorization on the two sides. And the heuristic complexity is LQ of 1/3 to C prime, which depends on C. And its minimum when C equal 2 cube root of 1/3, and at this point C prime is 2 times 1/3 to the power 2/3, which gives this complexity. Okay? So it's the same complexity as the number field sieve for large primes. Okay. So now we need to look at what's going to happen to our algorithm when we are not in the basic case, but when we have p which is either smaller or bigger than the basic value. So when p is smaller, well, we are doing everything similar, but we are stuck at one point because the sieving space is not large enough because the degree n is large. So if you take a large enough sieving space, you will raise these numbers to the power n, so you will get norm which will be too large. So you can't do it. You won't be able to collect enough relations. So the solution here is to sieve over elements of degree which are larger than 1. So instead of sieving on A plus beta times theta, what you do is you sieve over these expressions. Okay, so you choose A0, A1 up to AT, and you look at the norm of these two numbers. Okay? And then you get a bound on the norm. On balancing everything, you can compute the complexity. When p is larger, it's a different story. What happens is that the coefficient in F2, there is a coefficient of size p, because we added p to a small a polynomial with small coefficient. So it's bad again, because the coefficients are too large. So what you need to do is to compute something else for F1 and F2. And the only real requirement we have, when you look at what was before, between F1 and F2, is that they should have a GCD of degree n over fp. Because you want the common part of the number field to define fp to the n. So one idea that we used to ensure that was to start from f1 as before, and to build another polynomial f2, which will be a multiple of f1 mod p, but not over q, of course, otherwise it's trivial. So it's slightly tricky, but you start from f0, which is our previous f1. So you start from a polynomial with small coefficient on the right degree. And then you offset it by some constant w. So you create an equivalent polynomial, something which is exactly the same field, but by shifting by a constant. So doing this, you get larger coefficient in F1. The largest coefficient is roughly W to the N. And then you use lattice reduction to find a multiple of F1 mod P with small coefficient. So you reduce the lattice which contains F1, X times F1, X2 times F1, x to the power big D minus n, where big D is the degree you want for F2 times F1, and this part will ensure the reduction mod P. Okay? And looking at what LLL can do, we know that we will find a polynomial with coefficients smaller than this. And what we want to be sure is that we won't recover F1 itself. So we need to be sure that the expected coefficients are smaller than W to the n. On balancing everything, you can build good polynomials f1 and f2. Okay. So now let's look at the complexity of these two variations when we are in the case p equal LQ of 2/3 on some constant, which will be either smaller or bigger than the basic value. Okay, so when the constant is smaller, we need to go for the solution for small p's. So we need to sieve over element of degree t instead of degree 1. Okay, and then you can reduce the complexity analysis, and you find that the complexity will be this, and it will depend on t. Okay, and if you put t equal 1 here, you recover the previous value of the complexity. So everything is good. And when p is larger than the initial constant, it's more complicated. We find that the complexity will be given by the solution of this degree 3 polynomial. Okay, there is a single real root of this. Okay. So on a graph, here we are. The basic algorithm with t equal 1 is the best one to choose in this part of the diagram. From this point on, it's become better to use a large variation. And from this point on, it's become better to choose the small variation, first with degree 2, then with degree 3, then with degree growing. And there are two red limits on this graph. You have this limit, which is exactly touched here, which is the limit at infinity, which is cube root of 64 nines. This is the usual complexity of the number field sieve for prime fields. And you have this other limit that you go quickly to it here, when t grows to infinity, and it's cube root of 128 nines. So it's fun. It's once again, you multiply by 2 what is in the cube root. Okay, so now here is the complexity summary. For all finite field, what you have is three main zones. So up to L of 1/3, the complexity is given by this, with this constant. So it's cube root of 32. From 1/3 to 2/3, it's the highest complexity with 128. And above 2/3, it's 64. So this complexity is the same as what it was for small and constant p. And the complexity here is the same as for prime field. So it's nice because we find exactly what was expected. And there are two zones with transition, when p is LQ of 1/3 or LQ of 2/3. So in the case of LQ of 2/3, you have a transition between several kind of number field sieve variants. And here, you have a transition between one kind of number field sieve and several kinds of function field sieve. And you might wonder why here, in the previous graph, we were above the 128 limit. We were there because when you go to p equal L of 1/3, some part of the complexity which is usually negligible no longer is. So what is usually negligible is the cost to factor stuff. When you need to factor the norms, you do everything with SEM, and usually this vanishes in the small o, but here it doesn't. So that's why we are above the red limit. Okay. Well, that's now my conclusion. So what I have presented here are new, hopefully simple, and practical variation of the function field sieve on number field sieve algorithm, which can compute discrete logarithm in all finite field. So they are practical for two reasons. For two different reasons. The function field sieve is practical because the sieving code is very short and easy to write. And if you look at the Eurepid paper, you have some code there, which fit on one page, and what we used for these computations was very, very simple and basic. And for the number field sieve, it's even simpler, because if you already have a working implementation for prime field, you don't need to change anything. It will work. It might be a bit clumsy, but it will work. Okay. And here are an example of computation we did with all this code, with total giga instruction per year, well, per second time years, to show how costly are the computations. And you see that what we did previously on the two extreme cases, prime field and the small characteristic, cost more than what we did, especially with the function field. Okay. And here you have a different algorithm which was proposed by Verkotren and some co-author, and implemented it with Renald. And you see that it's much less efficient than the function field sieve for the same kind of field. Okay.